Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Welcome to Admirable Friends.
Welcome. It must be Tuesday night with our Admirable Friends. I was just getting ready to crack up. I'm sorry. I was getting a case of the sillies.
Well, you're probably laughing with our studio guest tonight, new studio guest.
Good evening.
AJ.
Welcome.
I feel very welcome. Thank you.
AJ's the oldest son
of
Carol and I in the family, and is joining us today because he's standing in for Alex, who's not a little bit under the weather.
There's big shoes to fill.
Well, we're glad you could make it.
Thank you.
Yes. Good to be here. Great subject tonight. We're starting the whole cycle all over again.
We are. And it's very timely. I think, as I say, this is the start of the year when everybody starts to make resolutions, so to speak, or determinations, and how do they go about doing it? How do they set themselves up for success? And so I think this is a really timely subject right about now.
Yeah. It takes a big mind strategically to look at determination. So it's kind of like, what do I want to, like we're painting pictures for ourselves. What do we want our life to look like?
But it's difficult.
Oh, very difficult. Challenging, but
unless somebody thinks that just because you're on this side of the microphone talking about it and it's like a cakewalk, no, that's not the case. I find it very difficult, and I think hopefully I'll unravel a little bit of that tonight.
Well, what I'd like you to do is we watched that movie together the other night, Lucy.
We did. Actually, AJ was the one who recommended it.
Yeah, so those of you that haven't seen it, it was an interesting movie because it basically explored the neurosciences feel that we're using about 10% of our brains, and the movie explored the possibility of using the other 90% of our brains and what that might look like. And what would you think?
I thought it was a very interesting movie. I thought it was an amazing storyline concept that somebody would take that storyline and put it on the screen and convey it so well, I thought. But it was really interesting to see what it might look like if you used 100% or 99% of your brain.
Now, the person that wrote the story, were they using 10% or were they using a little more percent? Like, how did they conceive of the 90% she was using? What'd you think, AJ?
I don't know. I thought the premise was interesting. I think it asked larger questions about, our human potential and, if we have the ability to, unlock more than really that we exhibit on our daily basis as far as our mental process and our capabilities.
And you see how that's applicable as a comparison for tonight? There's no doubt that if we're not living with a personal mission statement or kind of a single-minded approach to life, then we probably haven't done too much thinking outside the box. And so maybe tonight we could clean out the closet and open up some minds. And that's why I like thinking about that movie, Lucy. Now, even though it was a drug-induced kind of experience,
yeah, right.
That was expanding into the consciousness. In fact, speaking of drug-induced, I was listening to a report where a lot of these executives from Silicon Valley now are experiencing with LSD as a way to open up their minds and think. What do you think about that, AJ? You're in the design and creative field. What do you think about these guys popping pills to get the edge?
I don't know if it's the most skillful means to gain a competitive edge. I can kind of understand the rationale and maybe the pressures that they feel are necessary to contribute to them experimenting in that way. But, you know, personally, I feel that, you know, mind expansion, you can really do it through, you know, more purposeful, skillful, and legal means.
Does that mean natural means or?
Yes.
Legal, okay.
But you know what I find is interesting? Well, I believe, as AJ does, that I think that, you know, the more natural approach is probably, in the long run, going to be more beneficial. I think in this very fast food, got to have it now society that we're in, that they're looking for that edge, and they're only going so far is, let me take this to see what I'm going to derive from it. But I don't think that there's any thought process afterwards as to the consequence or the derivative somewhere down the road of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you are... You know,
that's like Russian roulette.
Well, if I understand that drug, LSD, it's supposed to flip your mind into thinking things that you otherwise wouldn't do. So you enter altered states of mind to do it.
But that's assuming that you remember what it is you were experiencing in the altered state.
Well, presumably these executives have been talking about ideas they had, new ways of looking at products, designing things, and that it worked. It was catching some momentum because it was working. So there were some actual tangible ideas that were coming out of this experience. But to me, it sounds like a shortcut. It sounds like you're trying to get something quicker than you would naturally, inducing it from external. If the mind has that capacity to think, I mean, my view is that our stress and our attachments to the way things are, the way we've always learned them, is our limitation of 10%. That 90% of our minds would be open when we learn to free ourselves of all of the biases and thoughts that have acted as chains and shackles on our minds over our lifetime.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it is ingesting a chemical, you know, and whatever insights you have, I guess it needs to be weighed with whatever costs will come with that. I mean,
yeah,
you are polluting your mind,
right,
and your perspective.
But in any case, in the Lucy movie, there were some interesting observations as far as there was that one scene where she was speaking to her mother and she was so still, yet had the emotion. So she simultaneously was still with awareness and could see kind of 360 all around her. But she says, "Mom, I can feel everything. You know, I remember your hugs, your kisses." And I just thought that actually as an actress, she surprised me that she did so well in that and looked like she had presence and really... But it so much parallels the training of the mind and the inner mind and what we're about. And so I thought I'd bring it up in the context of starting anew and looking at determination. And determination about what? You know,
how to open yourself up to something bigger than yourself. Just kind of expand your boundaries and kind of step to the other.
Yeah.
Take one more step further than you think you can.
Well, there is a boundary to admirable friends, and let's kind of set that context as we establish a new cycle with the mind qualities. Basically, what we said was, is what binds us together is we're all on a similar search or a similar path to a mountain, and the mountain is a more reliable happiness, something that means that it's not fleeting. The possibility exists, the goals we set, the overriding goal, is for more reliable, more dependable happiness. Some would call it well-being. I like that term as well lately. That's one that a lot of people connect with. So we're shooting for well-being, and that's the context of determination. So the question tonight is what should each of us set up as a determination given that it's the number one mind quality that we develop, what should be our determination in life to achieve that? How should we go about it? Why are we motivated to do it? So we're going to kind of go through all these questions as it relates to a good determination in that regard. But our emphasis in the entire discussion in the program has always been that we obviously still relate to the outer world of experience, relationships, sensory experiences, good times out, going to dinner, taking trips. But what we're trying to do to achieve this reliable happiness is learn more about our inner world, of how we process that information from the outer world, in the hope that we can get to a better quality experience. Does that make sense, guys, as a definition?
It does.
In a general sense?
The
so in other words, we're trying to shore up our inner world. So imagine that we're all like, there's a little man inside of us looking at our bodies from the inside and looking at our minds from the inside, almost like you were stuck in the middle of a machine. And how does this mind work? How does this body work? How can we get it to be stress-free? How can we get it to be more stable, more reliable, so we can indeed enjoy that outer journey? That's the crux of what we're after. That's the crux of the program. So tonight, and before we get to the body bit, let's kind of go through and do some gratitudes, as we usually do, and express, and again, a gratitude and our terminology means that we are acknowledging the kind actions of others that have come into our life and that act as a model for us. Carol, you want to take a crack at your gratitude?
I do. Tonight, I was going to say that I'm grateful for, well, I'm going to back up. I'm leaving my job in about 10 days. And, of course, a notice has gone out to the department, and it's the chair of the department has said, you know, Carol's leaving. And, you know, if you get a chance, go by and wish her well before she goes. And I am struck by how many faculty members and instructors and things that I have served over the last year and a half have come by my office and said some absolutely heartwarmingly wonderful things. And I just am grateful that they took the time out to come by my door, because it's just really, it's such a thoughtful and
that's a lot to be
sweet gesture.
Quite a few people.
Yeah.
And they acknowledged it. And
yeah.
They
said some really nice things. But they had to have made the effort to come like down to my office and just come in and do it and take the time out of their day. And just, it was really just so nice. And I found it embarrassing, actually. I felt like, you know, I don't know why I have a hard time accepting compliments, but
I think your intentions aren't for necessarily credit out of it, but when it's appreciated, I guess maybe it catches you off guard to a degree.
It does. It really does. But I just was really grateful, and so I wanted to mention that.
Well, your listeners might be wondering where you're going.
Oh, we're going to Austin.
Yeah, we're getting packed up and moving on.
We're
expanding
to Austin,
our
so
business
we'll be,
interests into Austin.
We'll eventually be doing the show from Austin in a couple of weeks, but so I had to give my notice and
all three boys are staying here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
They are.
And families.
So basically, we're running away from home. So did I guess.
No, as usual, we're leading the family business and hopefully getting something going. So they might be able to follow, or at least look at the opportunities to follow as it gets more developed. AJ, how about you? Gratitudes?
Gratitudes. I'm really grateful, and I guess to start it off, I don't think it was necessarily the person's intentions to do something that could be grateful for them, but their initial interest in meditation and sitting has actually really motivated my own practice as a result, or in kind of their interest has kind of motivated me sitting more consistently and almost being an example to them.
Yeah.
And I think through that process, I'm really grateful because I'm understanding the way I've reacted to their interest, and it's really done me a lot of good, and I'm grateful for that.
Nice.
Well, my gratitude tonight is for couple different people. First of all, the board at the Fort Worth Meditation that's assumed and stepped up such responsibility with you and I leaving, Carol. It's been really great to see people have interest to help and continue what I think is a great group.
It's a wonderful group.
It's exemplary to see. And, you know, it's funny, we sat in a room with about five or six of us talking about the future of Fort Worth Meditation. And on one side, it just, they all lined up. It was kind of the right brain was on one side and the left brain was on the other. They were the creative ones that were going to do a lot of the spiritual development side, and the other side was the practical side. And then they turned around and said, well, you know, we need somebody that can bridge across both. And then, so then my next gratitude goes to AJ, who's decided to step up and serve as the interim executive director at the Fort Worth Meditation. So,
applause.
Yeah, I'm kind of grateful for that. I think just as I was saying to my friend, I'm grateful for them. I think it also will help motivate my own personal practice. And
that it will, because once you open that big blabber mouth of yours, you better know what you're talking about.
I try not to open it up too much.
Yeah, you still got to lead. That's the job, you know. You're the moderator, and I served that for 2 years. And you know, if you act responsibly, which I know you will, you got to do your homework before you get down there, because you got some insightful people that are looking. Okay, AJ, what you got to offer today? Now you try to flip that around and see what they got to offer every time. But
But that's part of the facilitating and getting the shifting the conversation and getting it going. It's a wonderful group, and they're very open to the conversation. I mean, it's just refreshing.
We're averaging 20 every Thursday night. You know, it's really good to see that kind of development. And there's 10 or 12, actually about 14, that are just regulars now that come, and they have their practice. And business people, young people, college people, at-home moms, retired moms. There's such a variety there. And we don't break up beginners and experts in meditation. We just throw it all in one room and have at it. And the compassion that's there for the more advanced practitioners helping the beginners, and the insights that come from the beginners.
Well, so you're drafting off of each other, which is kind of a cool thing.
Definitely learn from other people's perspectives and what they contribute. And I think all around, we can grow from it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And again, it's fortworthmeditation.org. It's free, completely free. It's a charity we set up a couple of years ago. Go down and learn some meditation. Spend some time in some good conversation. It'll definitely be a shift.
With wonderful people.
Wonderful people. There's my gratitude. Okay, let's shift our conversation right back into determination. And let's start with the definition.
Let's start with the definition of
determination. Is an exercise of will, an exercise of will that skillfully directs desire with firmness and purpose. Okay, so we're determining desire, which is our energy. Mm. We skillfully direct it with firmness and purpose. And when I sent out a blast email to our regulars, and by the way, let me just do some housekeeping. bbsradio.com/admirablefriends is where you can download the material, as well as go on an instant chat line right now. And if you want to join our email list, send us an email at hello@admirablefriends.org, and we blast an email out before every show and put an attachment with it. So we actually framed tonight's discussion. You know, there's two aspects of determination. There's the overall determination that we make in terms of life, which would normally be termed a life's purpose, I think,
right.
Or a mission statement, a personal mission statement or a life purpose. So when we think of overall determination, let's think of life's purpose. And then there's weekly determinations or more important determinations. Another word that's synonymous with determination could be goal. But I like when I think, so overall determination would be a purpose, and interim determinations would be goals, right? So there's our terminology, and it's how do we skillfully direct desire with firmness and purpose. And I like the word resolve as well. I'd like to add to that. So that's the context. And again, how do we direct it towards the reliable happiness we're shooting for. So what we're going to be talking about tonight is not just, I want to be president and that's my purpose in life or something like that. Our context is, how do we direct desire in order to live a more reliable life? How do we direct it to head towards well-being? Okay? So that's the overriding objective. Before we go into how we do this, let's kind of work through the back door. Let's talk a little bit about doubt, which is kind of the mud that gets in the way of our determination. It's the opposite. The show is on doubt and determination. We always cover the opposite mind quality. And I'd like to ask both Carol and AJ, tell me about your doubts. Tell me what gets in the way of setting not just the overall goal, but goals in general. Speak from the first person if you can, but also think about in general what your observations are of your friends and where their doubts are. Go ahead.
Well, I can speak for myself. When I doubt always comes into play, I know I can follow through, but the doubt for me is just, I don't know, it's very crazy because it's almost like a fear of failure. But at the same time, I know that I've done some extraordinary things beyond what I think I can do. So I've proven up to myself through experience that I can do some things. I can follow through and exceed my expectations. But
you've got a track record. So the doubt's not because you haven't done it.
Correct. So that's where I'm always like,
well, but let me ask you, the doubt we're talking about, again, let's try to bring the context.
Sure.
In terms of overall determination towards a reliable, dependable happiness, towards well-being, why do you doubt that possibility?
Well, I don't shoot for it because I feel like...
That's you're not experiencing every day, right?
Right.
You, like most people, are ups and downs, like us.
Right.
Like me.
And right now, everything seems manageable and it's very, okay. So it's sort of like, well, why would I need to,
So again,
reach,
we get
overreach.
Back. Let's call that the Lucy syndrome again. So we're getting back to you're comfortable in your 10% of your brain.
Yeah.
If there is that hope.
Inertia kind of keeps
keeps me going. So you're there. So it obviously takes motivation, discussion, admirable friendship.
Inspiration,
a number of different things. And of course, timing has got to be right in your life where you can actually sit down and say, I've got, a lot of these little problems in my life kind of settled, and I'm ready to tackle an overall determination. So it should never be forced upon somebody, of course. AJ, your thoughts on doubt and the overall determination?
Oh, I think when you sent out that email, it had me, pondering my own doubts in regard to, and it had me thinking that maybe I don't investigate further on down the line in my doubts. I'll just look at it as doubts, and that a certain amount of doubt is healthy. I think a certain that I look at doubt almost being somewhat synonymous with intelligence and being able to question.
So you look
things.
At a question mark as doubt.
Yeah,
that's a good aspect of doubt. But what about the doubt that we're talking about that stops you from reaching for the moon?
That I think I can, investigate more. I do observe myself dealing with doubt that sometimes I get spin my wheels. I have a hard time, and I can see how it's the opposite of motivation because it does kind of, I believe, hold me back from my determination in that regard and maybe what my capacity has shown towards that goal. But it's something definitely that I'm going to marinate and internalize a little bit more in my practice and see if I can get to the root of my doubt, whether it's, maybe it's a self-confidence issue perhaps, or, I think very much like Mom, I can almost share a little bit of the story in saying that, I've accomplished certain things. So I don't know if I have tons of reason to be doubting my own ability, but somehow when you accomplish things, you can still cultivate a certain amount of doubt even after you feel like you've accomplished something. And I think that is something for me to look into.
Let me just suggest that it's possible that what we want is immediate determination. And as a result, we doubt we can have it immediately. When in fact, let's consider that determination is something that builds. right? So rather than, and I just think it's so normal for all of us living in America to want it right away. And if we can't have it right away, we just say, I doubt it can be pulled off. It's very short-term, myopic kind of look at things.
Sure.
And we're experiencing a highs and lows of relative happiness every day. Things go good, you have a good day. Even during any day, there can be an up and down, right? So you, this idea of reliable happiness is really hard for people to touch and feel, right? So what works for some, and definitely works for me, is the idea of taking things on a working hypothesis. Instead of just saying, I believe, we say, okay, let's take this concept of reliable happiness or well-being and let me work with it for a while as a working proposition. Let me set up a month or so, or let me practice, at least give it a shot in terms of practicing with our program to see if you can actually taste some of this reliable happiness. Then I think doubt ends up slipping away a little bit at a time because it's offset by confidence in your ability. Because you can't acquire reliable happiness. It's not going to hit us like a lightning bolt. It's something that has to be built based upon new skills that we develop.
So it's cultivated.
Right. So perhaps if we just change the idea, the concept of achieving this way, and don't beat ourselves up for having doubt, we just kind of look at it and say, yeah, that's an interesting proposition, well-being. Of course I'd want well-being, but what would I have to do to get it? You know, if I don't have it right now, if it does exist, such a thing. That I also, and my idea as to why we are plagued with doubt has a lot to do, and I'm going to throw something out somewhat provocative, but I think we all live under the assumption that's been taught to all of us that there is no reliable happiness. It doesn't exist. And I think your psychological influence, if you go back to Freud and all the psychology, their basic philosophy is the best thing you're going to do is polish your sneaker. Meaning you're going to relatively be happy in life, but life's basically a you-know-what sandwich. That's where psychology is coming from. Now, positive psychology has made great strides towards undoing the negative aspect of emotional experience and looking towards the positive. But the history there is that this is not a possible thing to have. And I also think that religion as we know it and generally experience it has the tendency, not in its purity, but in its application, especially in today's world, of overplaying the hand of you got one shot to live in life. You got one shot to live, and you're going to be judged by one person when it's all said and done. Okay, now this may be harmful to hear for some people here, but this is just my view.
Mm-hmm.
You got one shot at it, and you're going to be judged, and you're either going to be tossed into a fire or you're going to make it to everlasting life. Now, when you think about that proposition, if it's understood that way and it's that black and white, that's one heavy burden for all of us to live under. In other words,
feel a lot of pressure.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So now maybe there's a reason for some of this doubt tied into either one of those two movements. You know, what we've inherited for, you know, psychology and even the Romantics and Thoreau. There was no full enlightenment possibility. It didn't exist.
It was enjoying the moment.
Enjoy the moment, you know, eat a raisin. Best thing you can do is enjoy the moment. So there wasn't that idea of this possibility. And again, getting back to that movie where Morgan Freeman said, there is the possibility for 90% of our brain. When you open up possibilities like that, you open minds. You know, sure, we can go on our experience to date, and there is no rational reason to say that such a thing exists as a state of well-being for a human being to achieve. But there's the limit.
Okay, now let me work from this hypothesis. What if you feel as though that, I guess for lack of a better phrase, that you've arrived, that you're living a reliably happy life now? Is there any benefit from shaking it up and looking for trouble, so to speak?
Well, I think so, because you just used the operative word now. You say, I'm living a reliably happy life now. So you know down deep that that can't last. So it's not reliable. Yes, your words suggest that it's worth investigating. If you're on my side, just hearing what you just said. Because you said now.
I think logically you can see that slowly chipping away at doubt, you know, leads into your motivation. You know, you're overcoming doubt. Slowly build your motivation towards your long-term
yes.
goal.
And there, with those steps, AJ, as you suggested, I think you can use doubt as your advantage. I think you can make it a question, as long as it's a working hypothesis. And that brings me back to this discussion. If we've applied religion, and I'm not saying religion is bad, because, you know, I value religion. I'm saying if we applied it in such a way, it's a black and white, it's too much, you know, I'll live the best I can, I'm going to die and find out what happens type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or psychology says the best you're going to do is polish a sneaker. Well, you've got every reason to doubt the possibility because there is no working assumption that life as we know it could exist in a state of well-being, a reliable state of well-being. And I got to say, what's the downside of throwing it out there? What if you give me a downside of having that hope there? The only downside would be is if we approach it and try to grab that and eat that sandwich all in one shot, and we fail, right? But if we look at it as a working hypothesis, as any scientist would, and suggest, let's just look at it and see if we can prove an experiment, just whether it's possible or not, based upon our own experience.
And it does stretch your limits, and it makes you experience something that you wouldn't have done otherwise. And that proves up, again, build your confidence, and then there's the self-fulfilling prophecy that you can, and you have, and you will.
It's momentum.
Yeah.
Morgan
you know
Freeman in the movie was writing about it for 15 years.
Right. But I was thinking that doubt also could be your kind of your fallback, your, you know, a little bit of BS playing with it there. You could say, a little sense of healthy doubt is good. You know, that's kind of like, you know, you're hiding behind the doubt at that
right.
point. So you don't take that step and you don't see what's on the
right.
other side.
And that would be doubt not willing to put a working hypothesis on it. Because basically what your mind did, the 10% of your mind, just put a roadblock in your way.
Yeah, you've got to test the doubt. You have to make an effort towards...
There's got to be a working assumption.
Absolutely.
Okay? So I'd like to, as much as we can, try to look at that in the context of let's start as high as we can. What do they say? Aim high, shoot high? Or I might have that completely wrong. But,
I don't know. We should have kind of Googled that before we got here,
yeah.
but go ahead. I don't know.
I bastardized that one. But in any case, you know what I mean.
I
if
get
you,
the
if
drift.
You don't set it, you'll never hit it.
Correct.
Okay. And so let's set it out there today. Let's take a crack. We got nothing to lose. We're only talking. Let's set that goal high, and take a break for a moment. Let the music play, and let's try to let go, without the use of drugs, of all of our attachments.
Okay.
Let's take a moment.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Oh, And we're back. We're back. We're back from the break.
Yes, we're back. And what we're going to do is we're going to actually go through the exercise that we sent in our email.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask Carol and AJ to kind of give us their take on what their overall determination might be. We're not going to hold them to it tonight, but we're going to live in a kind of a land of potentiality. To use a favorite Deepak term, so we can see what it is. But, and I also like, when we think about this exercise, it reminds me of Stephen Covey with the Seven Habits, where one of those habits was begin with the end in mind. So the exercise that we're going to go through is we're going to begin with the end in mind as if you were writing your eulogy,
mm-hmm.
But you're looking in present sense. You're alive, but you're at the end of your life, and what do I want to have accomplished by the end of my life? What, you know, write that eulogy. And the email, if you have it in front of you, folks, you can look at that. But I'm going to kind of walk through the questioning and the framing of this particular question. Basically, when we think of a mission statement or overall life determination, there's three component parts. If you've got a pencil, you can write this down. There's the vision. And basically, that's what our vision is of ourselves, right? There's the purpose, which is the why. In other words, I've got a vision of what I'm trying to accomplish. Purpose would be, why am I trying to do it? And lastly would be the inner values, or how would I accomplish that? In our case, we've framed the purpose or vision. Excuse me, we'll start with the vision of what. We've got four options set up. On a multiple choice. Option A is a pleasurable life. Option B is a significant life. Option 3 is an internally fulfilled life. And option 4 is a life of contribution. A pleasurable life, option 1 is the hope that my pleasurable memories exceed those of my unpleasant memories. A significant life is the hope that I be remembered for my outward accomplishments. The internally fulfilled life is the life that's a hope that I've developed inner qualities of heart and mind and helped others with the same. And the hope that the mind qualities are of use in a further life. And a life of contribution is with the hope that others had benefited from my contributions in life. Okay, which one of you guys wants to go on the hot seat first?
Well, it's not a hot seat for me, but I'll take it, yeah. And this isn't like I'm going to start off from tonight, but my goal and purpose and vision for a long time has been for an internally fulfilled life. And when I think of at the end of it all, what I'd like to be, what I'd like for people to say is that she was a nice person. And beyond that, I could care less. For some reason, I always think nice, you know. I had a friend once, Elaine Peterson. I used to, grew up, our kids together when we lived back in New Hampshire. And I remember thinking, I said, you know, Elaine, you're one of the nicest people I know. And I always thought that she was, you know.
Elaine was a sweetheart.
Yes. And I always thought that, you know, my next life, I want to be nice, you know. Like, I guess I didn't put myself in that framework. But that's where I'm coming from. But I think that if I were to come from that paradigm, that all the other three that would fall into place. Because I think if you're a nice person, I would assume that you would have a pleasurable life. You'd have a life of significance. Maybe if you were nice to other people, they would benefit from that, and you would. Or maybe a life of contribution would also be a residual fact of being a nice person. So I don't see where that's going to harm me at all, nor is it going to harm anybody else, and it might do somebody some good.
But it is very single determined, which if you look at all great people, they seem to have singular focus on what they accomplished in their lives. And that's another discussion we can have, is what's greatness. But they seem to have that common aspect of a single-pointed determination.
And I guess for a majority of my life, I used to think that it had to be something really over the top, like wow factor. But I'm just not that way. So
when
I don't,
you say nice, does it mean nice to yourself too?
Now, see, there lies the rub. Like, sometimes I don't think I give myself the niceness that I give to others.
So is your mission putting yourself first, or is it putting others first?
By default, I usually put others first.
Okay, so but again, is your mission that you this vision of yourself?
I guess I haven't hammered
nice
out
person.
The particulars.
Okay.
I
I'm
going
to leave
this,
you that to think about.
I just have this big blanket nice, the word N-I-C-E, and that's...
That's a good starting point.
So...
But you can see that you've got to really work the two
and
of
that's
those.
And that's where the twisting and the turning and the... what does that look like? How do I get that balance? You know, where does it all go?
Is it a big order, a big, tall vision for you?
No, it really isn't. I just want it to be perfect.
That's what makes it tall and
yeah,
hard.
Exactly.
That's what makes it a mountain.
Yeah.
So you want to be perfectly nice. No mistakes.
I want to be just nice.
Well, a nice person doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Capital N.
But no, is it nice all the time? Reliably nice.
But not, that would be nice. Oh, I know. Welcome to my world.
I really appreciate you being so honest, Carol. I really do. I hope the audience respects
it. I hope you get what you're looking for.
I think you're already very, very nice. So
yeah,
personally, okay. I think if you were a golfer, I'd say you're or a pool player, I'd say you're sandbagging me with that mission, because you've
nice.
Already accomplished that mountain.
Too nice.
Too nice.
Can you
yeah.
be too nice? I don't think you can be too nice, because then you've gone.
So that's why I'd say if you want to make it a mountain, treat yourself nice. I think you've already accomplished the part of treating everybody and being known for nice. You know, look at the way they recognize you at the job when you left the job. I mean, you're a nice person. Everybody sees you that, but something tells me there's a
consequence. Do you think I'm resting on that laurel? Do you think maybe I'm not pushing myself?
I wouldn't say it's, if it implies anything like you're not pushing yourself because you're lazy, because I know how hard worker you are. No, I think it's just the fact that you haven't given this a considerable amount of thought.
I think, you know, mine, you know, as far as eulogy goes, the internally fulfilled, I think is something that I look for as a goal, as well as a life of contribution. You know, the other choices, I don't know if I necessarily trust myself as those as a goal. You know, the pleasurable life and significant life. And I know that sounds great in a kind of a fantasy sense. And, you know, like my ego really gets hugely into both of those options. But I think at the same time, I don't know if I necessarily trust myself as a pursuit. You know, a pleasurable life, I can definitely see myself, you know, abusing that and it being some sort of hedonistic, you know, oasis.
But look, you're a smart guy, AJ. We're talking about a working hypothesis. Let's zero in on that first one for a moment. You can join the discussion too, Carol. If we were to check off a pleasurable life as our primary goal, vision of what we want to accomplish, that includes, let me define that again, the hope that my pleasurable memories exceed those of my unpleasant memories. So that's your goal. That's your working hypothesis.
Well, the trick... The word here is memory. If you're only as good as your memory.
Are you reading too deep in it? That's not where I want to take it.
Oh, okay.
No, remember, we're saying,
well, why'd you
we're
ask?
Beginning with the end in mind. This is a eulogy. So we're saying on our deathbed, you lie in there and
right.
say, hey, wait a minute, my pluses exceeded my minuses. And that's what you're going to spend your whole life shooting for. Now, I'm going to ask you as a smart guy, is that a good bet?
I just think it's, I don't think so. For me personally, it's really all I can speak. And I think it would be more of a competitive nature just to try to
do it.
Yeah,
but you're talking more about the
execution.
I'm talking about more of the goal. Let's just look at the quality of the goal.
Can you do that?
Let's just look at the risks inherent in such an exercise. If that was my work, and I'm a scientist and I'm going to shoot for a pleasurable life.
Right.
Okay. Let's just carry that thought process through a bit. What that means is, that you better not get sick the last couple of years of your life. Because, well, first of all, if you were to get sick and you were to have any kind of physical pain disease, do you think the last 75 years of your life are going to trump The last two? Are you really going to go to your deathbed saying, wow, those pluses really exceeded the minuses? Or are you going to go with a lot of pain and a lot of drugs? Okay? So when you talk about the end in mind, how do you pull this one off is my question. How do you ever end up? Again, some of you young kids out there think that you can pull this off. Go for it. But I'll tell you, your body gets old, it gets tired, it gets sick, and it dies. That's what happens as you get older. That's how the story works. Okay? So how are you going to pull those pluses and minuses off? You're going to play like Russian roulette and say, I hope that...
You know, you just ruined the ending for a lot of people.
Huh?
You just ruined the ending for a lot of people.
Well, you've got to deal with reality here.
I get it.
I mean, isn't it also our perceptions of these things as well? You know, that, you know, how we take them, how we look at a plus or a minus is from an experience in life. You know, I mean, if we learn from things that are negative, are they absolutely 100% negative? No. So I guess I have a hard time understanding really that perspective of looking at things as a balancing act of pluses and minuses at the end of the day. I have a hard time wrapping my head around what that would look like for myself.
Yeah. See, I'm saying if I visualize myself in my deathbed at the end and I'm writing the eulogy, I don't see how I could have pulled off the pluses exceeding the minuses. I don't think life serves you that up on an external experience basis.
Well, that's why it was taking me towards the whole, like, pleasure palace idea, because if that was my goal, then I would just try to, you know, force feed as many positive pleasures as I saw, so that, you know.
And then consider suicide at 50 or 60 when your body starts breaking apart.
It might be hard for me to come to terms with, yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're really that set on that's your goal, to have the pluses exceed the minuses, then when the hair starts falling apart, you're getting old, and you call it a day. See, I think you really got to think about these things, because the reason why you got to think about them is because we take them for granted. That 10% of our mind, again, back to the Lucy example, we're thinking that we actually can beat the pleasure game. And I'm saying carry that out. Carol, we lived in Florida with retirees. It wasn't a pretty picture as they got older. Highest alcohol rate in some of those areas down there.
Yeah, and I lived in Florida too for a while, and I wouldn't say that just because of my location, everything was hunky-dory. You know, that, yeah, there were some great aspects to it that I enjoyed and that I experienced, but, you know, life is life, I think, regardless of what your environment is like, to a degree.
Well, the ones that I see enjoying their life, like my mother and her husband at 90 years old, they're not just shooting at a pleasurable life. There's something else they got going on there, which brings us to the inner side. You know, if you, again, I saw a lot of them still trying to play golf and enjoy golf, and then next thing you know, they're complaining about the greens aren't cut, this isn't right, the trees aren't that. And I go down there and say, what's your problem here? This place is beautiful.
Right.
Yeah, but it's just a matter of time probably before you adopt that perspective, perhaps.
Well, it's now just because of your perspective of getting used to all of those niceties.
Maybe take it
your body. What about when your body hurts and you can't get out of a golf cart? You think the greens are in great shape? You think you're going to be singing, oh, this is a great day out here?
Plus, and then you get kind of like lulled into that misery loves company scenario. So because you're not around admirable friends, it gets kind of toxic. And then before you know it, you're in the same blame game conversation. So that's another kind of fallback. But
I just want to throw some ideas. Okay, significant life.
Yeah, see, I can't equate to this only because I'm like a second fiddle person. I'm a behind the scenes person. So I can't even fathom, envision, or even wrap my head around what
would motivate you to do that.
Putting myself out on center stage. That'll never happen for me.
It's not in your DNA.
No. So, I mean, I'm not even, that wasn't even consideration.
In fact, just so we understand where Carol and AJ are coming from, Carol's top five strengths are learner, harmony, empathy, consistency, and input. AJ's are strategic, command, competition, ideation, and relator. So you guys are wired very differently. Carol's got the combination of an input learner, which are very strong thinking talents. So you're a learning machine. You gather input and you learn, and you've got harmony and empathy, and there's that like. there's that like all tied into harmony and empathy. It's right there. And AJ's got strategic, so he's thinking about this question. That's his number one talent. He's clearly thinking about this determination.
Where's this going? How's it getting there?
How's it getting there?
Some of my, I definitely see some of my own pitfalls. You know, even with the significant life. I guess that the bigger question is why would I try to be significant? You know, what is that feeding? And I think when I get to dissolving that, it really kind of emanates, I think, from my ego, which, you know, I'm looking to kind of corral in a sense. And, you know, I think shooting for a goal of some sort of prominence or significance in my life, I don't know if that's going to do me very well in the long run, personally.
Okay. I'm going to also ask you to kind of look at beyond what your own choices are for significant light. Let's get back to that betting game again, the working hypothesis. Again, step out of your own personal narrative. Is the significant life a good bet? I'll call this the Bill Cosby question. You could have lived your whole life for significance and had mistakes at the end, or you could have been a Supreme Court justice who fought your whole life for civil rights, and then all of a sudden the court changes its position and anything you worked for was completely wiped out. So the significance that you may have spent an entire life trying to have is gone at the end.
Yeah, significance just sounds like a lot of work, a lot of pressure to me.
Okay.
See, but I look at it more of like grassroots kind of thing. Like, I feel like I'm significant. I mean, I'm not living, I think I have significance in my life because I'm significant because I'm a mom to my kids. So, I mean, in that respect, it's a very kind of moderate.
With the hope that I will be remembered for my outward accomplishments.
Yeah, no.
It's hard for you to wrap
around. But
AJ, you don't see it at all. I'm sorry, Carol.
No, that's why I was saying that the internally fulfilled life has the other three kind of wrapped into it within moderation.
Within
it's
moderation.
All temporary.
They're derivatives, but they're not the primary.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the problem when it's the primary.
I think, I mean, being honest, I'm sure I'd like at the end of my day to have some sort of significance, but I think, you know, the quest for that may cause me a lot of problems.
Good point. Excellent point. Well, then, since you guys are zeroing in on this internally fulfilled life for our audience, which is really what we want the answer to be.
I saw the cheat sheet in the back.
Because
pick
it's kind
three.
Of, it kind of, it kind of aligns itself with the program. And you can see me trying to knock out ones and twos with my arguments, as a good lawyer would. But in any case, the third option, tell me a little bit about that for you two. What does that mean to you, internally fulfilled life?
Well, I don't want to run out of time before we get to the life of contribution. So why don't we go to that one and then come zero and circle back to the...
Well, it's kind of a derivative of the third.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, because I'm thinking, like, if it's life of contribution, wouldn't it be like a compassionate fool kind of thing? Like you're giving to... Would that be a problem?
That's why I tried to steer you away from it.
Why?
Because that's your tendency.
So why can't we talk about it?
Because I don't want to put you on the spot.
Well, go ahead. No, I don't care. I'm with admirable friends. Like, what am I afraid of?
You're on the radio. This is a podcast.
I'm with admirable friends.
Let's hope we don't have any listeners.
Okay. Go ahead. So what were you going to talk about?
I really want to know what this internally fulfilled life means to you both. Break it down for me.
For me, it's just, a sense of peace. Living a life that's kind of authentic to myself, you know, not trying to achieve something outside for the sense of somebody else's expectations, that, you know, at the end of the day, I can lay my head down on the pillow and I can feel accomplished about what I did, not in the sense of other people recognizing it, but perhaps for what I saw that I did that day, you know, and really, it just sounds like that should be enough.
Mom's crying, by the way, folks.
I love you. Your mother must be so proud of you.
It's a goal.
Well, those of you who don't know AJ, he's a tremendously creative guy, had some options to go up to New York with some of the biggest designers in the world and chose to live a simple life. I think that's part
still
of it.
Still creative nonetheless. But I echo that, what AJ says. That's,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
I
to me, that at the end of the day,
I mean, I do some designs.
What more would I want?
I do some designs that maybe never see the light of day, but that doesn't take away what I feel I accomplished in it. So I think it speaks to that number three to a degree.
Okay, well, we don't have a whole bunch of time left, so I want to ask you a key question. If this is what means most to you in your hearts to accomplish this, how would you pull it off? Mm. And this is nice talk, but how do you pull it off?
I think small systematic steps, I'm recognizing, is probably the best way for me to overcome my doubt and to build a sense of momentum in my
So you're saying break that overall determination into more weekly determinations?
Yeah, I think the whole thing can get me rather overwhelmed, I think.
Singles versus home runs, because that's it for me. A single, a single, a single. Builds the confidence, gains the momentum, you know, like the little engine that could, I think I can, I think I can, I know I can. And that's how it is. But taking that moment to look at it and find out how to discern between what's the right choice to make in certain situations that's going to lead to that overall determination.
Well, folks, you heard AJ and Carol both give the vision of what they were looking for, as well as kind of weave in the why and the purpose. And of course, the how with the mind qualities, they're part of the show. And that's, I imagine, what you're doing. Like you said, AJ, your stint at Fort Worth Meditation has a lot to do with motivating you. To stay on this path. So those of you that are at all interested in number three, as far as an internally fulfilled life, and are beginning to get more motivated, we love you on for the ride, because that's what makes us us as admirable friends, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And it doesn't matter that, you know, you're not going to, you know, it's how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight.
It's the only way it is
going to
happen,
guys. That's
why
it's called a lifetime journey. That's why we're all together doing it and talking about it and boosting each other up and giving each other confidence and
I think when you hear this, I think when you both hear the show over again tonight, you're going to find out how very relatable your comments were. And I hope we had some guests really listening in, because I'm very grateful for the honesty that you put forth and the frankness which you opened your hearts out to us. Thanks.
Yeah.
Carol, thanks.
Well, my pleasure.
AJ, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, folks, until next week, where we get onto discernment, because in order to really put this thing into action, we've got to use discernment to make choices, because there's a lot of choices every week to live
and
that kind of life.
And write in if you've got any comments during the week. We'd
love
to hear
from you. Hello at admirablefriends.org. Keep those cards and letters coming.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.